I feel like I have to handle anything that's going well with very kind of tender, soft hands, because I will inadvertently break it, and I'm scared that it just everything will kind of go away, which I know it will eventually. Not necessarily in a disaster or anything like that, but just like, you know, when you're an indie band, you have a shelf life, I guess.
Hello, and welcome to episode 31 of Attention Engineer. I'm Laura Kidd, a music producer, songwriter, and solo artist making music as Penfriend and beaming into your ears from my studio, The Launchpad, in Bristol. Find me around the internet at Penfriend Rocks. Thanks for joining me today as I continue my mission to encourage creativity in every listener by sharing conversations with some of the artists I admire the most. Welcome to the podcast. How's your week been? Mine was good overall, though in a moment of weakness and possibly hunger, I ordered way too much pick and mix off the internet last week, and it was not a good idea. It felt fun to buy something a bit pointless and a bit naughty, but it's way too easy to overorder when you can't see what you're getting. I don't eat very much sugar normally, so it was quite a shock to the system, but I was really in denial about why I was feeling like garbage until this weekend, when I could barely drag myself out of the house for a run. Sugar is serious. There's one large bag of sweets left, which I have entrusted to Tim, who has hidden them from me. So, that's been going on. As I record this, it's Tuesday, which is the day my new music video was premiered on Clash Magazine's website. Please do come and check it out at penfriend.rocks/monsters, and you can grab the song for free from that very page as well, if you like. I'd really love you to see this. Thanks to everyone who got in touch about last week's episode with Rebecca Lucy Taylor of Self Esteem. I'm really glad you enjoyed it, and I've got another great guest for you today. But first, a shout out for today's podcast sponsor. This kind person didn't want to be named, but they know who they are, and they've listened to every single episode of this podcast so far, which I think is a pretty great achievement. So thanks for listening, and thanks very, very much for sponsoring. They did suggest that I take this opportunity to remind you that if you'd like to support a future podcast episode or pick from a range of other member perks, you're very welcome to visit penfriend.rocks/join to check out my Correspondence Club. Big thanks to any correspondents who are listening right now. Liz Stokes is lead singer, songwriter and guitarist in The Beths, a band who hail from the vibrant and deeply collaborative music community of Auckland, New Zealand. Their blend of propulsive sing-along choruses, four-part vocal arrangements, and wry introspective lyrics has earned them fans around the world, as well as opening slots for indie rock titans like The Breeders, Pixies, Weezer, and Death Cab for Cutie. The Beths' 2018 debut album, Future Me Hates Me, drew acclaim from Rolling Stone, Pitchfork, NPR, Stereo Gum, the AV Club, and a host of other publications, many of whom listed Future Me Hates Me among their favourite LPs of 2018. After 18 months of touring, the Beths regrouped to write and record their second album, Jump Rope Gazers, which came out in July 2020. In this conversation, we discussed the value of establishing creative rules for songwriting and making videos, touring New Zealand during the pandemic, and Beth's bassist Ben's secret breakfast blog, the success and shelf life of an indie band, coping mechanisms for happier touring, why the Beths always take a cricket bat on the road, and the ever-expanding skill set of the modern musician. Just a quick note before we get started, this conversation took place in December 2020, so when Liz talks about hoping to tour next year, she actually means this year. Here we go. So you're in the future.
Yes.
From me. How's that? What have I got to expect for the rest of the day?
Tacos for dinner, I guess.
Ooh.
We're all having tacos for dinner in the future. They were good. They were lentil tacos.
That sounds good to me.
Yeah, having a good time.
I'm going to be really disappointed if that doesn't happen in my reality.
Yeah, well, there'll be no one but me to blame for it. And I apologize for that.
That's okay. Could you introduce yourself for the listeners?
Sure. My name is Liz, or Elizabeth Stokes, if you must have my full name. And I play and sing and write for a band called The Beths. And we're from Auckland, New Zealand, which is where I am now.
Yeah, in the future.
Mm-hmm.
Is it summer there now?
Yeah, it's like getting into that real nice, muggy Auckland summer weather that I really like. So just reveling in it.
That sounds good to me.
You can't see in the podcast because it's just audio, but I am extremely shiny and I'm wondering if I can turn off my camera. There we go. I've turned it off.
There you go.
Love it. It's the sheen.
The sheen. Well, I'm wrapped up in many jumpers. That's the thing that's funny to me, that we can be talking over this amazing technology, but I'm really cold and you're not cold.
Yeah, I suppose your son's starts setting around like 3 o'clock or something around this time.
It feels like it, yeah, pretty much. Oh,
brutal.
I've been watching a lot of this. There's this. Have you come across this YouTube channel about tiny houses? And there's a guy.
Does he have a tiny name?
No, it's so tiny I can't remember the name. That's terrible. It's really good. It's called Living Big in a Tiny House. And it's great. My husband and I constantly are watching this show. I think because it's easier to watch people with like minimalist lifestyles and really nice, tidy houses. It's easier to do that than to just sort our house out.
Yeah.
So I've seen a lot of New Zealand scenery through him lately, and it looks lovely. So.
Oh, nice. He's carting his house around.
Basically, yeah.
Mm.
It's good. Good times. Anyway, that's my latest New Zealand experience, because I've never been there, but I've always wanted to go. So it's one of those. It's on my list.
Oh, you should come when, you know, might be a while.
Yeah. Well, what's it like there at the moment? Because I know that I think it's a lot freer there, isn't it, than in other countries?
Yeah. I guess for context, what is it now? It's early December, and we had like a big lockdown back in April into May into June, where we managed to kind of mostly get rid of, well, actually we did fully get rid of community transmission. So we have a hard border where if you come in, if you come home, say you're a citizen and you're coming home, or if you manage to get a work visa, you quarantine at the border for 2 weeks in these border hotels.
Mm.
And then you can come in. And we're really lucky because it's meant that for large chunks of this year, there have been this the odd part where we've had to go back into like some kind of restrictions, or even Auckland had a short lockdown in August because some cases were discovered in the community. But mostly we're at zero community transmission, which means it's safe to go out and have like a fairly normal time. So we've, for instance, been doing gigs, and like we did a tour, managed to kind of get a tour, do a whole tour during one of these periods where there was no community transmission. And yeah, it's very very different and very lucky.
Yeah, I was looking at your tour blog, but I can only look at it at certain times of day because it's got lots of delicious food on it. It's brilliant, all the breakfasts.
Yeah, so that's our bass player Ben, that's his like own passion project, which I'm pretty sure that when he first started it, I think start of 2018, We didn't realize he was actually writing it. We thought it was a joke. Like he'd be on his phone, just like writing something, you know, like on his phone. And you're like, "What are you up to, Ben?" He's like, "Just writing my blog." And we're like, "Yeah, writing your blog." And then like we got to the end of the tour and like looked, and he'd blogged his breakfast, and like there were segments and everything. And he'd blogged every single day. And it's like it's a kind of amazing resource, because you know, we've gone so many places and you forget sometimes, and it's actually really nice to go back and he's kind of, you know, logged what you did on certain days, and it brings back a lot of memories, which is really nice.
Kind of like a spy, but within the band.
Yeah. It's like a spy within the band. He definitely knows too much.
I just love that you didn't know it was happening though.
Well, yeah, it just seemed like a gag, but like he's kept this gag going for a really long time, to the point that now I think he's starting to find it hard, but you know, you got to keep those fans of the blog happy.
Well, I'm very happy with the blog, so yeah, let him know I'm into it. And just the food does look incredible. I don't think I've had tour food as good as that in my time, but very different country where I live in terms of cuisine. It's not really our strong point, I don't think. And you came over here last year, didn't you?
Yeah, we've been over a few times now. And like, so you're in Bristol, aren't you?
Yeah.
Yeah, we really like it that we've had some lovely times there, played at the Exchange and stayed with the lovely people who run Specialist Subject.
Yeah. Oh, great.
They're just super lovely, and our friend Dave Campbell always books shows for us there. And
oh, I know Dave. Yeah.
Ah, yeah, it just seems like a nice nice place with a nice, lovely music scene. So and there's that boat. The big boat that you can go on.
Thekla. Oh, no, sorry, not Thekla. Thekla's the music venue. Have you played on there?
Oh, we haven't played on there, but actually we were there supporting Death Cab for Cutie and we like managed to rush over to Thekla because Cloud Nothings was playing.
Ah, okay.
So after our set, we ran over and managed to catch them and got to play on the Thekla, which was not play on the Thekla, be on the Thekla, which was great.
Yes.
But I was also talking about that big boat museum.
Yes. You mean the SS Great Britain, I think.
That's the one. That's a very impressive boat museum. We went on just being like, oh, let's go on this old boat. And it's wild. There's like statues and like a lot of information. You can go all the way into the boat. It's fine.
There's normally a man in a costume who will teach you how to do some knots as well.
Ah, I guess he wasn't there, but I'll watch some YouTube videos or something. And it will add up to the full experience.
It will, minus the freezing cold. Yeah, definitely. Mm. So what food did you enjoy in England? Because you seem to be disagreeing with me about the cuisine of Great Britain, which is good. I'm glad. I'm glad you have a better impression of it than me.
Well, the thing is that Ben's blogs from New Zealand, that was a much bougier experience than probably we normally would, because we felt special to be on tour. We were like excited. But normally when we're like touring through Europe or touring through the States, you're eating like a lot of the time you're eating road food because you just like... You leave in the morning and you've got to go straight on the motorway to get to the next town, which is like 6 or 7 hours away. And like, it can get pretty dire. And in the States, especially, like the gas station food is quite different to European gas station food. And what I like about the UK gas station food is like just the sandwiches. There's just like always sandwiches, which seems really basic, but like you can't just find like a sandwich in America, just like a triangular sandwich with like that's just like enough for one person to eat for lunch.
Yeah,
and it's not like a cheeseburger.
Yeah,
it's just some bread and something between it, and it's just like it's great. I'm a fan of just the whatever Waitrose sandwich that you can get on the road in the UK.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Actually, we do have healthy options, which is it's definitely harder to find. Yeah. Elsewhere.
For sure.
Speaking of touring, then, because you've done a lot of touring, how do you and the band stay healthy when you're traveling so much?
That's very presumptuous that you assume that we stay healthy.
That was presumptuous. No. That's a really leading question. I'm sorry.
No. I'm just
do
kidding.
You?
I mean, we try. We do try. Like it is harder in certain places, and just depending on how much time you have. Like if you have time, and you're in a place where there's like a Trader Joe's or like a supermarket that you can swing by and like grab something, some like fruit and vegetables or like some stuff like that, you can make that work so you don't have to eat another gas station, I don't know, burrito or something. I don't know. We always bring a cricket bat, a little mini travel cricket bat on tour. And that's quite a nice way to, if you can have a rest stop where there's a little bit of grass, just kind of like run around and throw the ball. And depending on how quiet it is, maybe have a hit or just pretend to have a ball and just move around to kind of prepare your body for the next 3-hour, 4-hour stationary go in the van.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, just recently on this podcast, we've been talking about the sort of the rigors of touring and the fact that like it's kind of presented as the prize for a band to get to be invited to play everywhere forever kind of thing, like be on the road for years and years. And it's not a prize because it's brilliant. Of course it is. But it is not an easy lifestyle. So I suppose I'm asking about coping mechanisms. If the band have had to discuss, or, you know, individually, have you had to think about how to, I guess, adapt your life to a road life? Like, because it can't be exactly the same as at home. And when I ask about being healthy, I'm also talking about emotionally, you know, that kind of stuff. Because it can be really, really hard. And like I say, externally, it would just be like, oh, that band's so successful, they're living the dream. Because living the dream is being away from all your loved ones forever in a van, you know?
Mm.
But there's more to it than that.
Oh, yeah. Like, touring can be brutal.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so there was a real culture change when we did our first, like, big international tour. We'd gone to Australia once or twice, but, like, the first big tour in 2018 in the kind of lead up to Future Me Hates Me coming out. And Ben and our original drummer weren't coming on the tour because they were working and stuff. And so we brought my friend Katie to play the drums and Jonathan's brother Chris. And Katie especially just was, she brought with her this, like, she's like someone who's, you know, quite anxious and is really, really good at communicating. And, like, you know, in the lead up to that tour happening and, like, preparing and rehearsing and stuff, she was also, like, making sure that we all, like, talked about, you know, what it was going to be like. And, like, it's fine that if sometimes, you know, someone just needs to have some quiet time. And, like, when we, like, finished touring with her, it was just, I just didn't realize that, like, touring could be so, or just, like, being in a band could be, you could feel supported and, like, just loved by the people around you. And, like, it's something that's been really important to us to have a kind of a culture of trying to take care of each other. Up until this time, it's mostly when we tour, it's just the four of us. So now Ben's backing the band, which is great, and we've got Tristan drumming full time. And, like, yeah, it is just the four of us. And, like, everyone has days where they just, like, they just can't, like, but there's, like, a real sense of, like, picking up the slack for you know, people, and that, you know, and that, like, if you're having a rough day, they'll pick up slack for you. And, like, just trying to communicate to each other, like, if you feel shitty, just being like, I don't feel so great today. And yeah, it's made a big difference. And it feels nice to tour together. But yeah, but towards the end of a really, really long run, it's still, you just get exhausted mainly. Yeah. I feel like it's just lack of sleep, I think, over and the kind of days that you do where you start at 8, start driving, and then, you know, you get back to the hotel room or something at, like, 2 a.m. and then you load out of the van and then you do it all again the next day. I feel like sleep is something you miss a lot.
Yeah, and it's very physically taxing. All that really adds up. And none of this is to complain about the wonders of touring. It's just I find it more interesting to talk, because we could be like, isn't it great when things go well? End of podcast. You know? But I'm really pleased to hear that, because I've been touring for a really long time, and not once when I was playing with a band, and whether professionally, by that I mean being hired to play in other people's bands, or more independently with my own stuff, never once was there a situation where we communicated in any form of that which you've just described. It just wasn't a thing. And now I'm talking to bands who are younger than me, and even nothing to do with age, but just people who are a bit more enlightened and able to talk about their feelings and able to share negative things as well as positive things with their bands. And it just seems like a different world. And I'm just really pleased, because I found touring a lot of the time quite hard. I love it, but I also, it is just hard. And I didn't feel like I had anyone on the road with me to talk to about it.
Mm.
I could talk to, you know, my partner or family or whatever on the phone about it, but they would never understand because they don't know what it's like to do it, you know?
Yeah, totally.
So I'm just really pleased. I'm glad you said all that. I'm glad you're having a nice time doing your band.
Oh, yeah. I mean to play that where everything's like, we've figured it out and everything's perfect, you know? Like, I know that I'm greatly helped by the fact that my partner is in the band. He plays lead guitar and he records. So, like, it really, a lot of the time it feels like a kind of partnership in terms of the way that we run things, which is really good. And, like, I'm not having to do long distance, which, like, makes things a lot harder, I think. It seems like a small thing just to be like, oh, long distance is hard. But like, it feels like it's maybe the hardest thing for people who are in relationships and touring. It's like maybe the worst thing. So I'm really lucky that Jonathan's in the band. And yeah, it's something that we try to be really sensitive to as well with like with Tristan's partner, who they've been together for a really long time, and like always making trying to make her feel included and stuff like that. And same with Ben. So it's, yeah, trying to make sure everybody is feeling okay.
Yeah. Well, it's so important. It makes everything a lot easier if everyone's happier about what's going on.
Mm.
How has this year been? Because it's obviously been an enforced break for quite a lot of artists, but obviously you're in a country where you've been able to travel. So have you been doing anything different than you would have done, aside from not going to other countries to tour? Have you been doing any live streams and things like that and embracing technology to reach fans in other countries?
Yeah. It's so like the main thing that's different is just no international touring. But so there's a couple things. Like one of them is that obviously we've toured New Zealand, but something that is quite important to us is that we've toured New Zealand much more extensively than we normally would have done. Mm. And it's been interesting to us to have that. We've seen quite a big, I don't know, like we're much more well known in New Zealand now than we're a niche band. We're like an indie band. We're not like huge in New Zealand or anything, but like we're a lot more well known now at the end of this year than I think we would have been. Like we've kind of, so it's nice to know that focusing on just local music and on our own country is kind of, it feels like our career is still kind of developing here or something.
Yeah.
So that's nice. And then the other thing is, yeah, like you say, like going through the odyssey of live streaming. And I remember back in March, like really talking to like lots of people and talking to the band and like trying to figure out what to do with this thing. Like it's live streaming. What is it? Is it a replacement for gigs? And it was like, no. and it was really curious to see the very first, we did a live stream because we were going to release the album anyway. We were like, okay, well, let's do a live stream instead of a gig for every single. And it can be a way to kind of mark the occasion, which was, I think that was maybe the best thing about it, was that for us, it was something to focus on. And I think that's what bands seem to be finding, that it is the most, that is the most useful thing about it, is that it's like, it is just something creative to focus on, I guess, to put your energy towards.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just funny. Like we did one back in May and it got like quite a lot of views, which is, you know, we had like 1,000 people watch live, which was like quite big for us for a live stream. And then just every live stream subsequently that we did halved in viewership. And like, even though like our production value was getting better, because I was learning more about, you know, like the streaming software, and then I like was getting multicam setups going and stuff like that. And we ended up doing full band stuff. And I was quite proud by the end of like the things that we made.
Yeah.
And I'm glad that we only did like 4, and they're kind of like standalone, and they helped us to learn, us and sports team, who I ended up getting to help us run the live streams. We ended up filming and then streaming a week later our live gig that we did at the Auckland Town Hall.
Okay.
And that one was a paid one, which was the first paid stream that we did. And it felt good to be able to have it be like, you know, it's a concert film, basically. So it felt like something worth, you know, spending $20 on. And it felt, we were proud of how that turned out. But just like over the course of that time, doing like random live streams on like Instagrams and things where people ask you, and like more and more we were just kind of like, yeah, no, we're not doing any more of these. They don't feel very good if you're not doing them, like if you're not doing them because you yourself want to, I think, and you're initiating it and it's your own thing. We just found that they were like, they kind of got a bit depressing just to kind of like jump on somebody else's Instagram thing and like play for 20 minutes to and different people kind of coming in and out. Like it just didn't, it didn't feel great. So we have kind of stopped doing those, even though some of them were paid, which was good.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
but not much. I think it's nice to play with, I don't know, even to just be supporting other bands, I guess. Like we went on, Rat Boys did a 25 hour live, nonstop live stream. It was a fundraiser thing. And it was just nice to go in there and like hang out and play. Like that was something that we did. And that felt nice because it was, but that was like something that for Rat Boys was like a passion project and something that they like care deeply about and like were putting a big effort into. I think I was more talking about like, just different platforms, like, companies and things, or media outlets and stuff, just being like, can you make us, it's been a year of content creation. Maybe you've heard this from people, like people are constantly requesting content, which I think is cool. And like, if you're up for making something and if it's for a good, I don't know, if you know, then do it. But it's just, there was a period of time where the requests for us to like make video content or to like make live stream content or like was like kind of relentless, and it got a bit intense. There's parts of that that I kind of like, right? Like that kind of DIY in spirit of like, you know, if you are going to make something, make it yourself and make it you, make it your voice and your you know, and take ownership of it. Yeah, it's just. Yeah, I don't know. It's hard. That's why it's harder when you're making it for someone else sometimes.
Mm. Well, your videos are a really good example, I think, of showing that DIY spirit. Is that something you enjoy doing as a band, making those? Because it looks like a lot of fun.
Yeah, the videos are fun. Like, they're fun to watch. I think like anything, it's like parts of it are fun to make and parts of it are slog, I suppose. It's like writing the song is fun, and then there's parts of it that are just work, you know. But videos are something that we, for some reason, we make. I don't know, because like, you don't have to make videos anymore, you know. Like, it's, you know, there's no MTV anymore. Well, I guess there is, but like, you just kind of throw them on YouTube and into the YouTube void and see what happens. But oh, I should actually say, we're very lucky in New Zealand that we have arts funding.
Okay.
So that's why we make videos. Not all of our videos are funded, but like, we have arts funding that you can apply for, and you can get like between like 5,000 and 8,000 New Zealand dollars, which I think like, what is it, 2,000 to 4,000 pounds maybe to make a music video. So it's like, it's not a huge budget music video. A Hollywood music video.
That's decent, though.
Costs, I'm sure, a lot more, but so like there's kind of a culture in New Zealand of like scrappy videos, trying to, you know, make a video that's as good as you can get for approximately 8,000 New Zealand dollars.
Yeah.
If you can get the funding. So I mean, arts funding helps a lot with like New Zealand artists making stuff, which like then can be seen. You know, we're a very, very isolated country. So, I mean, it helps a lot, I think, to be able to make something that people all over the world can see. I think it helps to project a little bit. But, I mean, videos are non-essential, but for some reason it's something that we really like, and we make a lot of them, with particularly with our friends and sports team, but with different people we've worked with before. We have, like, just some rules that, like, we like them to be funny. We like them to not be cool, and we like them to be colorful. And we also, I think it works best when I tend to not have a particular vision for videos, and I like to kind of just throw to somebody that I trust. And the hardest thing is just finding somebody who's like aesthetic you trust and who you trust gets you. And and the stuff that like Callum and Annabelle have done, or Ruby and Ray and Chris, who made the Future Me Hates Me video back in the day. It's just great. Like, just funny people with good ideas. And you get funny stuff.
Yeah. Who is that New Zealand band? Because I've heard about this funding thing, because there's a New Zealand band who made a video where they just spent all the money on pyrotechnics. Do you know that one?
Is this the Sneaks?
I think it might be the Sneaks. So a friend of mine showed me this years ago.
Was it a song called
"I'm So Funny"?
I'm Lame by the Sneaks. This is such a great story. So funding is a lot more, it's a lot stricter now, like, you know, because I think, I don't know if that video is real or if it's a joke, you know, like if they spent that money and made the video, but like, so the storyline is fake, but, okay. But yeah, so the video starts with them being like, the Sneaks being like, the Sneaks won $5,000 to make a video, and then they put it all on a horse.
That's it.
And then, yeah. And then they win. And then the last like 20 seconds of the video is like one of them's dressed as a hot dog, one of them's dressed as Mozart, and one of them's dressed as like, I don't know, something else. And they're then they're playing in this pyrotechnics, and it's suddenly just like a really high def camera, like, yeah. But just for the last 20 seconds.
Yeah. It's the best video I've ever seen. Sorry, I love your videos, but
No, that's a very a super inspiring video. I still watch that video like every year. It's like it's just inspired. It's so good.
Thank you for reminding me the name, because now I can actually watch it again and relive that moment. Everyone should watch it. It's so good.
The Sneaks.
So good. Because to some extent, you may as well set fire to the money. set fire to the money.
I mean, totally. Like there's videos that have gotten funding, they come out and they get like 600 views on YouTube. Like where I feel like a slightly safer investment, like we seem to get like fairly good views, but it's like you're still subject to the algorithm and
yes, of course.
some of them have less than others. Yeah, so I mean, I would say making music videos non-essential, but like if you can make one DIY and scrape together a bit of money and have a fun idea, I think it's only worth doing them if you want to do them and if you have a good idea to do them.
Yeah, I mean, I feel that way about all the social media stuff as well. It worries me when people say they feel pressure to like be on it all the time as an artist, because that's definitely internal pressure. Twitter's a funny one, because I don't know if you've ever done this, if you just don't go on there for a month and then you return, you just see everything's just much as it was before and no one really missed you. So it's quite a good humbling thing to do.
Mm.
But we can all get a bit obviously caught up in us being the leading star of our own life, which we are, and just think that our presence somewhere is going to be sorely missed if we have a break.
It's not
really.
Yeah,
but it's good to sort of reassess that.
I view social media basically as work. Like I have,
yeah,
if I have something that I have to post, it's like, it's real, you know, just like a log on to not log on. I just like post the thing to Instagram, and I post the thing to Facebook, and then I post something to Twitter, and then I try to put it down and not look, see what happens, which is maybe bad. Maybe I should be increasing engagement by replying and stuff, but I want to move on with my day because that takes me like 2 hours to do.
Yeah. Well, your day shouldn't be taken up with that if your day is supposed to be about something else, you know, obviously.
I guess that's kind of my job now, isn't it? It's like 1/3 emails, 1/3 social media, 1/3 rehearsing, and then like sometimes you write a song.
Yes. Well, speaking of which, you're talking about having rules for the videos, which I think is brilliant. I think that really helps. Do you have rules for songs? So what makes a song a Beth song?
We kind of do. Like we particularly in the arranging, like when we first started the band, we definitely had rules. And I think that was kind of helpful for figuring out what kind of band we were going to be. And now I think because we've kind of figured out what kind of band we are, we don't have to use the rules as much, because like we kind of just have a feel for what feels like the band, if that makes sense. But like the early ones were like, they're super obvious ones. It's like we like fast tempos, like everything had to be fast. There were no slow songs. There's like I wanted things to be kind of cheerful and like major sounding. But the lyrics, it was fine if the lyrics were sad, but the melodies, I wanted to be quite chipper. And as time goes on, like the melodies have gotten maybe sadder, and there's like more nuance in like of emotion and stuff in there. But like that was kind of where we started. It was just like trying to make really catchy, like hooky music and have it be kind of loud but dynamic. And then have it be, I didn't want it to be jammy, I think. So like whatever the opposite of jammy was, like kind of tightly arranged. So these are all things that we kind of like, within the first 6 months, we're kind of like, oh yeah. And we also wanted backing vocals. So we all had to sing. That was like a big thing. So, I guess there are kind of rules. We all play a lot of different kinds of music and historically have played other music in other bands and things. And, like, I don't feel necessarily like I'm not able to express myself when I, like, put rules on. Like, I was never making avant-garde, like, music that really pushes the boundaries. I just wanted to express myself, and I do that kind of through the songwriting, and then I don't know, the assembly, I guess, of the song feels really satisfying if you can kind of arrange it as a group well, which I think we've managed to get good at. Yeah, rules. I like rules.
I think parameters are so important. Yeah, rules are really important. But you know, the rules of a pop song, the rules of a song being 3 to 3.5 minutes, that restriction allows for amazing creativity. You know, the restriction of we've all got the same number of notes, apart from people who play jazz who seem to have all the notes. And I know you studied jazz, so I had to put a jazz joke in.
Still only 12.
It feels like more though, doesn't it?
It sure does. Yeah, but like all the rules are arbitrary, right?
Yes.
Yeah. But, sorry, I interrupted you.
No, I don't know what I was saying, really. I was just making jokes about jazz. that just comes from being an untrained person, obviously. I read something that one of your bandmates said about how studying jazz made you all realise what you didn't want to do in the band.
Oh.
Which is interesting. I don't know who that was. I don't know who to blame for that one.
I wonder. Like, I feel like, because I'm now like, close to like 10 years out of jazz school or something like that, and I feel like I went on a journey where, like, I think I started the band maybe 4 or 5 years out of jazz school and was like, I was still, trumpet was still my main instrument, and I was still doing like jazz gigs and covers gigs and stuff, and it was like, this was a way to rebel against that and be like, haha, now I'm doing something different, I'm playing guitar and there's no improvisation and it's all very you know, poppy, and I really liked that. But the further I get from jazz school, the more I'm like, I learned a lot. It's a place where you just learned about music every day, and you played music every day for hours and hours every day. And like, I think you don't necessarily have to go to an institution to do that. But I think learning about music, if you like music, is always gonna be great. Like, you're always gonna come out feeling like your understanding is better. I think it just makes it more fun the more you know about it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I honestly had no clue that there were any kind of courses in music that weren't classical courses when I was at school. So it didn't occur to me that I could go and do that. So I went to university to do English, and then I didn't even finish that because I just really wasn't interested in doing it. And then now, looking back, I think, wow, if I'd known that there were sort of music schools. I know it seems ridiculous, I didn't know, but I didn't know. Or like pop music courses or songwriting courses or anything like that. To have 2 or 3 years immersed in that would have been an amazing gift. And I didn't have any of those, and I'm still able to make music that I care about and that other people care about. So that's fine. And I don't regret it, but it's interesting to look back and think, I wonder what my life would have been like if I had that opportunity. So it's a wonderful thing, you know, it's a wonderful thing to be able to do.
Yeah, totally.
Did you meet all of your band members at that place as well?
I met Tristan, who's our drummer now. He was there, but and we all went there, but I knew Jonathan back in high school, and okay. Ben prior as well, just from playing in high school guitar bands.
Yeah,
so we've come full circle.
Yeah, but even so, that still proves the point that if you're doing music at school or at, you know, for a course at college or university or whatever, or you make an effort to go meet people who are doing music, that's how you meet the people you might make music with, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's maybe like my favorite thing about studying music was just like the number of musicians I met, I guess.
Yeah.
Which, like, it sounds obvious, but like you have a lot in common quite often with these people, and like it's just, you talk about music all the time, and it's like, it's great.
Just to be thrown together with like-minded people is a gift, I think. You never know what's going to happen after that.
Yeah, definitely.
I'm really impressed by your lyrics.
Thanks.
And I really love really good lyrics. And I was just wondering how you've got to the point where you're so bloody good at lyrics, because that's not something that happens overnight, I don't think. And I think people, I hope the people listening understand that through the conversations I've been having with lots of different people, that you don't just write something, it comes out perfectly every time. It's something that we have to work at quite a lot in different ways. Sometimes it does come out perfectly. And maybe you're going to tell me, no, Laura, it just comes out like this. And I'll just be jealous, I guess. But there's often work involved. So I was just wondering what your process is for writing lyrics and how you got to that point.
My process has changed a little bit over time, but historically it's been like I'll write freehand. It's not the word I mean. What's it called when you just write?
Longhand?
Stream of consciousness, I guess.
Yeah.
Writing, and then sometimes historically I would write a lot and most of it would be garbage, but then giving it some time and going back to it, I'd kind of find sections where I was exploring something that I liked, or maybe even just phrases and things, and that would maybe be the basis of a song when I was noodling on my guitar, and I would kind of flick through and see if there was something that kind of was making sense and kind of assemble the song from there. So I always wrote lyrics first, and then you have to do the thing where you had to write the difficult second verse. But I guess that's writing the raw material. But then, you said, it doesn't come out perfect. And in a lot of ways, you're working with more of an idea. And for me, one of my favorite parts is just kind of bending the words so that they are fun to say and fun to sing. And so I really like internal rhymes and alliteration and stuff that shouldn't be. It's not. I don't know. I'm way too into it. I like it a lot. I was higher than a biplane. You hit me like a hurricane. Just little internal rhymes.
Mm.
And I think the words should feel fun to sing or feel good to sing. They should feel good coming out of your mouth. And also, the big one for me is that I'm deeply self-conscious, and so I have to be pretty comfortable saying them, and that means that I have to like these lyrics, otherwise I just I feel embarrassed singing them.
Right.
I can't feel embarrassed singing them, even if they're really vulnerable or really personal. They have to be kind of phrased in a way that I'm comfortable with. Some combination of that creates maybe my particular lyrical style and my particular lyrical voice, and I think maybe that's different for everybody. It's what you feel comfortable singing and what feels good to you to sing with your particular cadence and with your particular way that you enunciate things, and whether you like to hold notes or not, and it's going to affect the melodies that come out of those words as well.
Yeah
Well,
they flow really well. The thing I noticed about when I listen to your songs is that they flow really well, but there's so much packed in there that I feel like I need to go back and read while I'm listening to really get it, you know, which is good. I really like that. I love that there's a richness to that, and that I feel like there's different layers of depth I could go to to really get your songs. And there's just a lot to go back to, because I don't like songs that just pass me by.
Yeah, I think I write too many words.
You think you write too many words?
Well, I suspect that I do, but I also like it. So I don't, I'm not a very succinct writer. But that's just part of my vibe.
Yeah, it's your charm, isn't it? It's your thing.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting how people feel about their own stuff. Because I was talking to someone the other day for this. Thing is, the only conversations I'm actually having in life, apart from with my husband, are on this podcast. So whenever I'm going, I think it was for a podcast, definitely was. I haven't talked to anybody else. So we're talking about the fact that we'll never get to hear our own music as a listener with fresh ears. And that's kind of tragic because you'll never hear it how I hear it. Now, of course, no one else will ever hear it how I hear it, because I'm me and no one else is me. But still, there's that distinction between I made the music, and yes, I can listen to it, especially because I produce my music, so I can listen to it as a piece of music. I don't hear every single part and obsess over something being wrong or anything. I can hear it as a piece of music, but I still can't hear it how someone who wasn't involved will hear it.
Totally.
And I'm kind of gutted about that.
Yeah, it's hard. You can get a song to the point where you're like, I like this and I think this is a good song.
Mm.
But you just never know, because I feel like if you listen to any song about five times, even if you hate it, after five times, I feel like you just like it.
Yeah.
Once something is familiar to you, I just I have no idea maybe how to tell if it's good. That's hard.
I've been feeling that way as well about music that I've loved since I was a teenager, because I think that's such a moment when you can really start loving certain bands, because it's about having very little freedom as a child and also growing up and trying to decide what you like and then sort of latching onto certain things in a really big way. I wonder now if I listened really in depth to all of the stuff that I really loved as a teenager that's kind of defined me and shaped me as I grew up, whether I would just think the music's actually quite shit. Because, you know, critically speaking, because it's about, I think a lot of the love of music is about when it comes to you in your life and like what experiences it echoes or mirrors, or, you know, what age you were when you came across it, or, you know, the scenario. So I wonder about that kind of thing a lot.
Totally.
Pointlessly. But
no, it's
had a lot of time to think this year, you know.
I mean, my favorite bands are still the bands I liked when I was 14, you know. It's just,
yeah,
you can't help it. Like, I get really excited when anyone who is a teenager likes the band. I'm like, yes, maybe we'll hit that sweet spot.
Yeah.
And that makes me, actually, like, it sounds like a joke, but like, it actually makes me really happy to think that like we might be, our music might be part of somebody's kind of like memory of their like adolescence or something, like, because that's what like a lot of my favorite music is. And I feel like quite often as well, we get people who are older, but then they say, I love your music, it reminds me of the music that I listened to when I was 14, which I like as well.
Oh, that's nice. So who are your audience? Have you got a sense of that from touring? Because I know you've obviously done a lot of really big support tours where you're going to be gathering a proportion of those people, hopefully a large proportion of those people, into the Beth's audience. But do you have a sense of who your audience is? Like, what kinds of people?
Yeah, it varies. Like, it varies city to city, and like I said, this year in New Zealand, we've done a lot more focus on local touring, and we've got like we have quite a lot of like families where like it'll be like kids who come to the all ages shows and their parents, or like adults and their parents. who like, but for some reason, and they'll come and they'll be like, oh yeah, this is like, you guys are the one band that we both like, you know. And I quite like that.
That's lovely.
Yeah, but different places, like in the States, it would depend if you're on like college radio, or if you're in, I don't know, if you're being played on Sirius XMU or something, like the audience will be different depending on people who've discovered you in different ways. Or if you play at like a DIY venue, then that'll be like a younger crowd. And then like in Australia, it's just everywhere's different. Like, it's different city to city. I don't know. I should look at our Spotify insights to get a bit of luck.
I love talking to people at shows and finding out about them, because I'm always trying to work out what is it about what I do that has connected with you in some way, you know. I just find that interesting.
Oh yeah, and that's the roughest thing about this year, right, for people releasing music. And it's just not being able to do that for the whole year is,
yeah,
like for us, until we kind of got to play the songs live, like the album didn't really seem real. And like, we're so lucky that we got to play these shows in New Zealand, but it's not like the 100 or whatever shows we would have played in the rest of the world. But we're lucky to be able to do it.
Definitely. I was going to ask you about the challenges of releasing music in a global pandemic. I'm glad that you actually went ahead with it. A lot of people have been putting their albums back. Was that a consideration?
Oh yeah. And like, I don't know if it was a mistake or not, because again, you have no control, you have nothing to compare it to,
of course.
Like, we're not a huge artist. The thing that's hurt the most is like the album release tour, which is like, you know, that's, you spend all the time making the album. That's kind of like when you get to tour and like you say, like interact with people who actually like your music and hear people singing the words and stuff. And also like that's when like we would have made money this year, which would have been great. But I don't know, like, if we can tour next year off this album cycle, then maybe it will have been okay. But like, if you're not able to promote your album by touring, it definitely took, like, we definitely took a hit in that department, I think.
Yeah.
But I don't know. It would have probably felt like a much worse year if we had an album finished, which we finished in March and like handed in and just were just like sitting on it for the whole year, I guess.
Yeah.
It would have been maybe a much sadder year, I think, for us as a band.
Well, and for your fans, I think. So, because the people I've been talking to all year about these things. So I've got a membership club called the Correspondence Club, and I talk to my mailing list about this stuff, and you know, people on the internet, people seem really delighted that things are still coming out.
Totally.
Because those people need that release as much as we do, or maybe more. So the people who go to gigs all the time, I feel for them more than I feel for myself, because I'm not someone who goes to gigs all the time and needs to have that sense of community around me and stuff. I love playing the shows, but I'm not the gig goer who goes to, you know, 3 things a week, 5 things a week, then those people are the people that keep us all going. So I think the people I've been speaking to are really, really pleased that music is still coming out. You know, obviously is different for us, and it's hard, and it's financially difficult as well. But I think it's kind of like, it's a vote for hope for the future almost, to go, well, we're going to put this out because then we're going to probably do another one.
Yeah.
Have you started thinking about the next one already because of the scenario?
Well, yeah. I mean, now that like we've got potential for next year to be fairly empty, yeah, like we've started kind of writing, and yeah, it's definitely felt productive to have released music and to be like, it's okay, we'll just make some more.
yeah,
but it's just hard to know.
And it's really hard not to have that actual feedback, in-person feedback from an audience, isn't it? Obviously, you got to do your tour in New Zealand, but to be able to go and see people in different places and go, oh, yeah, this music is connecting in the way that we wanted, or what have you.
It makes such a big difference between the album coming out in July and when we went on tour. I think it was in November. Like, you know, that's 4 months. It's like, it's all good. And people have been very, very sweet, and that's been really, really nice to see that people like and connect with the record. But you always like, there's just that little, you know, that thing of like people like tag you in things where they like don't like the music, and you're like, why would you? I don't.
Yeah.
I just like, and these little negative things where you're like, it's actually not too bad. I usually just brush them off. But I think there was kind of a slump post-album because we had such a flurry of activity, and then the album was out and then there was nothing. And normally at that point you're touring and you're seeing people every day who are like, I don't know, singing along and just like happy to be there, and that feels good. And so these things, they just kind of like roll off your back. You're like, oh, you know, what's like somebody saying on it, you know, on Instagram that this album was disappointing. when, you know, you're seeing these people and you're getting to play the music live. And so there was this kind of slump where like the album's out and then it's just quiet and you're just in your house with your phone for 4 months, and you're just
not good for the brain, is it?
It's just a bit of a battle. But I don't want to oversell it, because it's like, not oversell it, but just overstate how many, there's like such a minuscule amount of negative feedback, but you know, your brain always blows it up.
That's what we remember though.
I know, it sucks.
It's kind of like with social media, when you look at the notification bell thing and it says 15 and you're like, ooh, your brain goes, ooh, what could it be? Something amazing and life-changing. And then you look, and even if you do have a comment, you're just like, oh, okay, but what about the next one? It's about the anticipation of the thing rather than the actual thing happening. And so I think it's a similar thing. Because we do stuff and we do want love, because we're artists and we want people to love the thing we did, or at least acknowledge it. At least the people who are going to get into it have a chance to come and tell us, you know, that they liked it and things. We like applause. We like compliments, of course.
Oh, love some claps.
Yeah, all of that stuff, right? For me, it's not that that good comments are expected and they don't mean anything. It's just that that's what you're hoping for. So when something comes along that you're not hoping for, that's jarring, that's not what you're intending to create, like a shitty comment or whatever, I think that does stick more. It's like a little pin in your side. And like you say, if you don't have anything to balance that out, so, you know, your tour, for instance, it can be really hard. And when you go on tour, even if the gigs aren't going as well as you want, or as well attended as you like, or whatever, essentially you're going to new places every day and people are pleased to see you because they invited you to go. So there's kind of like a rarefied experience of people being so nice to you.
Oh, yeah.
So I find it hard when I get back off tour. I'm like, well, no one said they're really pleased to meet me today.
Yeah. Brutal.
This sucks. Home is rubbish. But it's just, yeah, I totally relate. And I'm putting an album out and I'm not going to be able to tour that record. There's no way.
But you're going to go ahead with it?
Yeah.
Is that something that you flip-flopped on?
No, not at all. I've never wavered about putting it out because, again, I feel that putting stuff out in a time like this is important because people need new things and they need that hope, I suppose. And whatever little thing I can do that's positive for them is what I want to do by releasing the album. But also, artistically, I do want to move on and write another one quite soon because that's how my mind works. It's not that I'm throwing it away or it's dead to me or I don't care about it. It's just that I'm going to make more music. And if I waited, and who knows for how long it would be sensible to wait, say I waited till September or even the following year, I don't know that I would be that interested in touring just those songs because my mind will be on the newest stuff I've done.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like make something, put it out, make another thing, put it out. That's what I've been doing for 10 years, you know. And there's always, I've always had the hope just before something comes out, this could be the one where it all clicks together and all my dreams come true. And then what normally happens is that doesn't happen because that was never possible. That's just what my mind thinks might happen. And then incrementally, I grow an audience and I'm so thankful for that. And then I make another thing and it's much more incremental. But that's why when I see a band like your band, who's getting, you know, the acclaim and the attention you actually deserve for the music you make, I'm so delighted because it's a lot harder when that doesn't happen. And I think you said something really lovely in an interview about how you feel lucky because you know there's a lot of other music around that is brilliant and not everything can get the attention that, you know, that bands can get. There's just not enough resource in the world.
Oh, totally.
So I just think it must be nice when you put a video up, you know, people are going to watch, like you were saying. There's some level that you don't have to tweet it every day to make people click the thing, you know?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it feels good and it does feel lucky. It's like you say, it's like, yeah, just people go like, well done, it's so well deserved, you work so hard. And you're like, every musician I know is like working their ass off. Everyone's working hard.
Yeah.
And like, you know, there are 20 bands that I know that I'm just like, these bands are incredible. How are they not, you know, the hugest thing? But it just feels nice to be a part of it.
Yeah.
And to still feel a part of it and to, yeah, it feels nice to feel part of a community of people that's making good stuff. And yeah, we feel lucky in a lot of ways.
Well, that's lovely. But also, yeah, you're very good. So that's important to note. Very, very good. Well done. What was it like touring with the Pixies? Could you even believe that?
We just did one show with the Pixies. I feel like
Like
it's one of those things where like in bios and in PR things, everything, it's like they've played with these bands and these bands and these bands. So we played one show opening for the Pixies last year at Spark Arena. It was really fun. It was just an Auckland hometown show. They were great. Spark Arena sounds a bit like an echoey shed, so it was a little difficult, but they sounded good. We didn't meet them at all. It's interesting doing these supports for like bigger bands. It totally varies and it just depends on the artist and like how much energy they have, I guess, to meet you. Like touring with Death Cab they were so lovely and like came and like hung out and let us like eat dinner with the crew and stuff, which like not everybody would do. And they were really lovely. And The Breeders, like, as well, when they played in Auckland, we supported them in 2018. Also just lovely and, like, chatted to them afterwards. And it was, like, the last show of their tour and before they headed home. And that was really sweet. And the night after the Pixies show, actually, we did a show at, like, a winery opening for Rick Astley and A-ha. Which,
wow.
Like, Rick Astley, lovely man, like, came and like had a chat with us and like took a picture with us and watched part of our set from like side of stage and A-ha just like rolled up in like BMWs straight to side of stage and then rolled straight out. So we didn't meet them or anything, but like, yeah, I don't know. It's I'm not like, some artists are dicks and they don't come out to see you because it's just, you know, if you're a touring artist and you've been doing it for that many years, you know, it's just, you're tired. You don't want to meet like four rando musicians, I guess. But it's wild that some people still do, which is like, you know, very very sweet and a nice surprise. But we kind of never expect it, I guess.
Yeah, like some bands are dicks, but for the most part, I think it's people are just preparing for their show in the way that they have to do a good show.
Yeah, like to know that, like, I don't know, 20,000 people or like 5,000 people are coming and you have to put on a good show for them. Like, you have to, and it's riding on you. Like,
yeah.
Why the hell are you talking to me in the support band? Like, what? You know, if this is making you happy and going to make you do a good show, then great. But if you need quiet time, and that's fine. You know, like, I get it.
Yeah. I was like that when I met Corin Tucker for the first time. So when I played with them in London with Filthy Friends, and Peter Buck was there as well. And they were both, Peter Buck was really chatty before the show. And I was just thinking, oh, I hope he doesn't feel like he has to speak to me. And then I was thinking, he's a grown up man who's done this for a long time. It's his choice. But that's just my brain going, why is he giving me pity chat? He wasn't. He was just being nice. And then I really wanted to speak to Corin and tell her, like, I was grateful for the show and all these things. But I also didn't want to be too much. And I wanted to make sure I wasn't, like, getting in the way of her getting ready for her show. But equally, she's a grown-up woman who knows how to advocate for herself. And if she had needed to, you know, exit the room to do vocal warm-ups, she would have done it, you know?
Yeah, totally.
People do what they want to do, I think.
Yeah, that is very... that makes a lot of sense. And and I think that you are right.
Oh, thanks. I like being right. I just, I don't know. I feel like I've just been learning very, very slowly for a long time and suddenly have all these sort of epiphanies that I should have had a long time ago. But at least they're happening now. Now, look, you probably need to go to bed soon. And I'm actually wearing running clothes because I'm optimistically going, I'm going to go for a run after this. So
before the sun sets, what is it? Nearly lunchtime in the UK. Must be nearly time for the sun to set.
Yeah, it's 10:15 in the morning. The sun's going to set soon because it's dark and wintry and horrible.
Got to get out there.
Yes. So that's my polite way of saying I'm going to ask you two more questions if that's okay with you.
Sure.
Which three pieces of your own work would you recommend as a gateway for new listeners?
Oh, wow, it's wild that someone would have made it like an hour in. It's just like, who is this woman? I guess maybe Happy Unhappy is a song from our first record. This is hard. Maybe Whatever, which is actually on our first EP and on our first album. We liked it so much we put it on twice. And that was like maybe one of the first... I think it was the first demo I ever made, and I got lucky because most of the first year of writing I did was I threw it away in a productive way. I was like, cool, I'm getting better and I don't need these songs. But Whatever was one that was just kind of good and we got kind of lucky. So maybe Whatever. And then something from the new record, maybe I'm Not Getting Excited, I think is quite like a fun song. It's on the more raucous end of the music that we make, but so don't let that make you think that it all sounds like that. But it's fun.
Cool. That's a really good mix.
Thank you.
Well done for knowing the songs that are good. I don't know what I'm saying. and finally, this is quite a big one. But what is success to you? And have you ever experienced it?
Oof. I think I'm quite often scared to call things success. This is something I've touched on in my music quite a lot. I feel like I have to handle anything that's going well with very kind of tender, soft hands, because I will inadvertently break it, and I'm scared that it just everything will kind of go away, which I know it will eventually. Not necessarily in a disaster or anything like that, but just like, you know, when you're an indie band, you have a shelf life, I guess. To me, we've had this kind of like rumble of success, I feel like, for a long time. Not like everything's great, but just like, it's felt like for a long time that, like, since way back in like 2015, we were playing like just local shows in Auckland. It just seemed like we were always growing, I think, in a slow and like small way, where like we'd play a show and then the next show there'd be like slightly more people and like slightly less of my friends and like more people that I didn't know. And I was like, oh, this is interesting. Like, and like then we started, you know, moved to like a slightly bigger venue in our hometown and kind of did national tours, and this like 5 year kind of 6 year ramp up of like, it doesn't feel like we've exploded anywhere or anything like that, but like just that every day I feel like a few more people listen to our music and like it, and that feels good to me. This kind of, that feels like success, I think, is just more people listening to our music and enjoying it. And that's the thing that I am scared will go away. But I know it will.
It's interesting what you said about a shelf life. So is that how you, do you really see it that way? That the band would only exist for a certain amount of time, and that's dependent on people still wanting, well, I suppose people would still need to want your music if you think about it.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Do you see yourself as someone who's going to make music for your whole life in different projects, perhaps?
I think so, yeah. I think I always want to keep making music, and I have other means of doing that as well, you know, like with like playing trumpet and I like this last 3 years has been maybe the only 3 years in a long time where I haven't played in like a bunch of different things, like a bunch of other people's projects and things like that. So that's something that I think I would maybe go back to. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. It feels sad to say it, but I mean, there's not that many bands that I know that still, I don't know, that just kind of keep making new music. But I don't know. I find the ones that do very inspiring. I think I would like to keep being a band for a really long time. I would like to, for this to be a career, you know. But I don't know. I think I was just being, you know, a bit scared. You don't know how long you're going to get.
No, of course. And I think it's a sign of I'm always more impressed by people who will voice that fear rather than sort of bluster around going, we're the best band ever. Of course we're going to be around forever. And everyone's going to love us forever. That's a weird way to live, I think.
Oh, totally. It's like, if you look at bands that have been around for a long time, there's no template, you know, like all of them have very different stories of breaking up for a while and getting back together, or like, you know, like Death Cab's one is really interesting, of like becoming like really huge and then kind of like continuing on in this kind of like sustainable kind of way that where they kind of keep making good new music. And I don't know, like there's new local bands, like do you know the Bats? They're a Flying Nun band, and like they've been around for a long time and they're still like always releasing music, and then maybe not full-time musicians, but they're like, they've been a band for just a long time and are still making good stuff.
Yeah,
it's inspiring to see bands like that are kind of still going and still seem happy in the creation of music, like in making music together. I think that's quite special.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Well, I'm always fascinated to talk to people who are in bands, because I'm soloized and I have played in bands, but I'm not in a band now. So I find it interesting, because when bands work, they're incredible, and it's something that can't be replicated by any single member, obviously. And it's always something that's bigger than the sum of its parts, which is something I say a lot, because it's just something that I just find it so fascinating. And all the bands that I love are very much that. So just, I'm just really impressed when it works, and when it, and for as long as it can work and people be happy to do it and be making music they're proud of, then of course it should. But whereas I know that I want to make music, solo music, for the rest of my life, of course a band might have a very different sort of mission or goal. So I just, yeah, I'm just interested. That's all.
No, the differences are, you know, you got four people and trying to line everybody's lives up as time goes on, I think gets really difficult.
Yeah. I have really left that on a downer. So what I'm going to do is ask, I feel that that's definitely my fault for rambling.
Oh, no.
Could you recommend me three other artists or bands that you're enjoying at the moment?
Sure. At the moment, I'd say check out Emily Adrosa. She just released an album. She's a New Zealander. If you like electronic music, you could try Amelia. She's also from New Zealand. It's like a electronic music album. And if you like hip-hop, I'd recommend checking out a New Zealand duo called Church and AP, who are really great and got a good sense of humor as well, but also great music. It's all very local centric, but like, you know, I've been really enjoying really just digging into local New Zealand music, and I think it's just great.
I just want to say thank you so much for talking to me. It's been such an interesting conversation.
Thank you for having me.
For more on Liz and her work in The Beths, come and visit the show page at penfriend.rocks/Liz. Thank you so much for listening today. If you enjoy this podcast, please consider helping to spread the word by sharing it with a friend. And feel free to say hi on Twitter, Instagram, or Facebook. I'm at penfriendrocks everywhere. And I really do love to hear from you. Don't forget to come and watch the video for Exotic Monsters. It's at penfriend.rocks/monsters. And if you're not already signed up to my mailing list, now is a very good time to join. I've got some very exciting news coming very soon. I'll be back next Wednesday with another deep conversation about creativity, grit, and determination. So I hope to catch you again then. Bye for now. Keep a kiss for me, 'cause we all fall down under.